Thank you, Denise. Denise has already welcomed you to our virtual worship service this morning, but allow me to add my welcome as well. It's Mother's Day, and it's also day whatever of the COVID-19 pandemic. We've explored the theme of motherhood in the next several minutes, we will explore the theme of themes rising out of the COVID-19 pandemic. What ties them together for me is the way that nurturing and the lack thereof plays through both topics. I will also share with you off the top, I'm a bit nervous about preaching via Zoom for the first time. It's seriously weird, actually, but here we go anyway. And welcome to my study, a space that feels very different to me than does our sanctuary. For some reason, as I started thinking about it, it made me recall FDR's fireside chats. As I read more about these, the similarity between the times FDR addressed the American people in this way and our current situation became striking. And so did the differences. I found myself identifying with FDR in another way too, as well. His fireside chats were a series of evening radio addresses that FDR gave between 1933 and 1944. He spoke with familiarity to many Americans about the promulgation of the Emergency Banking Act in response to the banking crisis, the recession, New Deal initiatives, and of course, World War II. On radio, he was able to quell rumors and explain his policies. His tone, his demeanor, communicated self-assurance during times of despair and uncertainty. Roosevelt's press secretary, Stephen Early, noted that the president liked to think of the audience as a few people seated around his fireside. Listeners were able to picture FDR in his study in front of the fireplace and could imagine they were sitting beside him. Now, I'm not pretending here to compare myself to FDR, so okay. I do nevertheless identify with him in some ways. He contracted polio when he was 39 in 1921. I'm nearly 75, and I remember far too well the polio epidemic at the first half of the 1950s. There was a large group of kids in my neighborhood who played together outdoors all summer. We ran from house to house, we rode bikes, we jumped rope, we spent hours on roller skates, and we swam at the Baker Park pool. Two or three times, though, things suddenly changed in ways that we couldn't comprehend. We were kept indoors and not allowed to visit in one another's homes. Pool was closed. For me, that was about the ultimate insult. One day we heard about the little girl at the end of our street who was very ill. Later, we learned that she had died. Her name was Sharon. FDR's fireside chats allowed him to remain seated while he spoke. Since I have significant limitations on how much I can stand and walk, as a result, I've needed to change to sitting when I preach, and so I can relate to his situation there too. We have had nothing. Now, there's a similarity in the times. We're in a time of crisis. He was certainly in a time of crisis. Differences, however, are breathtaking. We have had nothing equivalent to FDR's fireside chats to provide stability during the COVID-19 pandemic. And we should have had. Here's what we've had instead, according to one political opinion columnist. Someday, presidential historians will fully explore the defects of heart and mind and character that led Donald Trump in the midst of an unprecedented national crisis threatening hundreds of thousands of deaths to brag that television ratings for his afternoon briefings rival The Bachelor finale or Monday Night Football. Exploiting this type of tragedy in the cause of personal vanity reveals Trump's spirit to be a vast, trackless wasteland. Trump seems incapable of imagining and reflecting the fears, sufferings, and grief of his fellow citizens. We have witnessed the total failure of empathy in presidential leadership. So far, he continues, the main focus has been appropriately on the president's lack of competence. We clearly have a medical and scientific A team being supported, to whatever extent they are, by a White House D team. But the United States is now on the verge of events that will demonstrate the need for empathic leadership. Even under the best case scenarios, we are entering weeks of mounting fatalities. Before it all ends, many Americans will know someone who dies or faces severe illness. At the same time, we will start counting and feeling the costs of an economy in suspended animation. Trump accuses his opponents of wanting to tank the economy, ties presidential attention to the gratitude of governors, throws out xenophobic jibes, and accuses healthcare professionals of stealing protective gear. There's a hole in the heart of Trump's rhetoric where empathy belongs. How must the marginal in our society, prisoners, migrants, the homeless, the destitute, how must they view a president who seems most excited by stock market gains and welfare for big corporations? End quote. We deserve far better than this. Trump's presidency will forever be defined by his utter failure of heart as well as common sense during the COVID-19 crisis. In case we need a contrast, I want to play a short video clip. Many of us have likely already seen it, but it's worth repeating.
This is a challenging and solemn time in the life of our nation and world. A remorseless, invisible enemy threatens the elderly and vulnerable among us, a disease that can quickly take breath and life. Medical professionals are risking their own health for the health of others, and we're deeply grateful. Officials at every level are setting out the requirements of public health that protect us all, and we all need to do our part. The disease also threatens broader damage, harm to our sense of safety, security, and community. The larger challenge we share is to confront an outbreak of fear and loneliness. And it is frustrating that many of the normal tools of compassion, a hug, a touch, can bring the opposite of the good we intend. In this case, we serve our neighbor by separating from them. We cannot allow physical separation to become emotional isolation. This requires us to be not only compassionate, but creative in our outreach. And people across the nation are using the tools of technology in the cause of solidarity. In this time of testing, we need to remember a few things. First, let us remember we have faced times of testing before. Following 9/11, I saw a great nation rise as one to honor the brave, to grieve with the grieving, and to embrace unavoidable new duties. And I have no doubt, none at all, that this spirit of service and sacrifice is alive and well in America. Second, let us remember that empathy and simple kindness are essential, powerful tools of national recovery. Even at an appropriate social distance, we can find ways to be present in the lives of others, to ease their anxiety and share their burdens. Third, let's remember that the suffering we experience as a nation does not fall evenly. In the days to come, it will be especially important to care in practical ways for the elderly, the ill, and the unemployed. Finally, let us remember how small our differences are in the face of this shared threat. In the final analysis, we are not partisan combatants. We are human beings, equally vulnerable and equally wonderful in the sight of God. We rise or fall together, and we are determined to rise. God bless you all.
I disagreed with many, probably most, of the decisions former President Bush made. That being said, the former president did an admirable job of speaking what we need to hear right now. It's just too bad that we had to hear it from a former president. We clearly cannot expect emotional and spiritual solace from the Oval Office. We're not going to get it. Part of what that suggests to me is that this kind of support, like protective masks and hand sanitizer, must become a do-it-yourself operation. And we are doing it in this beloved community. I feel safe in saying there isn't a single person among us who isn't doing something. Maybe you think you aren't doing anything, but you're staying home, keeping each other and yourself safe. That counts. One and all, our board and our committees are working to maintain the connections that are so vital to us all. In the coming weeks, our pastoral associates, in cooperation with many other groups and individuals, will be rolling out a structured plan to help ensure that people are contacted on a regular basis to make sure they're okay. As I've talked with people about this, I've been impressed by how much it's already happening. We're not creating something new. We are putting some structure to it and making it intentional, but we're not creating it. It's already happening. People are checking in with each other and reaching out to let me know someone who might need a check-in call. Groups that used to meet in person have transitioned to virtual gatherings, and we've created new types of Zoom events. That ball will keep rolling. Our caring committee, in conjunction with a number of other groups and individuals as well, is finding new ways to provide assistance with meals when someone is ill or returns from a hospital stay, ways to keep that assistance going in the absence of in-person meal prep and delivery. There's a large number of people who have worked so hard to make our virtual church experience as good as it can be, and we're still refining that. We're doing it as a denomination also. The UUA on the national and regional levels has continued to provide a stream of high-quality resources for navigating the times we are living in. I know many of us have utilized these resources, reading blogs, attending webinars, participating in congregational leadership calls. I have benefited from several national-level pastoral support calls that they have sponsored, and I'll be drawing on material provided in webinars that addresses new ways to do pastoral care in this time. Especially on the regional level, too, the UUA is supporting us in our process for selecting an interim minister and finding our way through the transition that we're going through as a congregation. The Reverend Susan Frederick Gray, UUA president, wrote in a recent blog, and her what she says here, particularly at the very beginning, resonates with me. This week marked 50 days that my family and I have been sheltering in place, with the exception of infrequent trips to the grocery store and walking the dog. The adrenaline of the urgent transitions of the beginning of the pandemic is giving way to the grief over loss of loved ones, the pain of distance, the fear of what is to come, the anger at the mismanagement of the crisis at the highest levels, the weariness that comes with understanding that we will have to live with social distance and virtual community for a long time. If you are weary, prickly, exhausted, angry, you're not alone. This is a time when care and compassion are primary, and that includes offering it to ourselves. Reverend Gray, Frederick Gray, also had a prayer that was included on the Interfaith Day of Prayer Facebook page, and I will close with that prayer. Spirit of life, source of all, hear our prayer. In this time of global pandemic, when fear and suffering are so much with us, keep our hearts open to love and guided by compassion. Steel our hearts against the urge to withdraw and pull away from the care and welcome of all neighbors. Help us to reject the temptation of false voices calling for a return to normal, knowing that what was normal marked too many lives and whole communities as expendable. Give us strength and courage to call forth, to organize, to pull together, and demand a new way of being rooted in compassion and interdependence that nurtures a future where all life and our planet may thrive. In this holy time, when we are physically distant and yet our interconnectedness is undeniable, help us to feel the great web that holds all of us. May we lean more fully into its beauty, its truth, and the power of it to guide our way forward in love and justice. May it be so with us. And we will sing our closing hymn following our Mother's Day photo montage.